Hi everyone, David here. Just finished a great conversation with Dan Kennedy this week, and as usual, I ask him questions that I hope would be relevant to you. Questions regarding the speed of change that we're seeing today in our country, the speed of change that we're seeing in politics, the economy, our own businesses for that matter, and the move towards more regulation, more compliance, more confiscation of property and wealth that appears to be with no end in sight. These are the complications to which we, as entrepreneurs, as navigators of our own frontiers, have to deal with. And there's a danger in complacency. There's a danger in what I would call the sense of permanence, that what we've built, what we know today, what we've experienced for probably decades in our lives is not going to change. That feeling that things will stay the same and we just keep doing what we've been doing and we should be okay. That's been a luxury that we've really experienced in this country that few other people outside of being citizens or living in this country have had the opportunity to have. For the first time in many of our lives, and particularly in our kids, in our grandkids' lives, there's going to be a lot more volatility ahead. That doesn't mean that the future can't be navigated, but new skill sets, new ways of thinking are going to be required. So talking to Dan is always a good person because he paints both sides of the fence. He says there's good news and there's bad news, and that's really true. Oftentimes we see only what we perceive to be bad news and challenges, and life is unfair and it's unjust. And certainly we can name all those things. Absolutely, we can. But we have to look at the other side and say, where are the opportunities? What do we still have the ability to control in our own lives, in our own businesses, in our own wealth, and particularly our own freedom? Which is really what our lives should be about and what this country still allows, although those freedoms are being challenged on a regular basis. The good news is, as Dan would say, is our government is very dysfunctional. Now you'd think that would be a bad thing, but it's a good thing because the drive towards what we see today as heavily towards socialism and Marxism, the dysfunction of the government is at least slowing it down. Now the trend is definitely in place. And I think backing out of that is going to take nothing less than some kind of a major reset, which we may have. And again, preparation in advance is going to be so important. Whether we have it or not, preparation is always the key to everything. And again, leaving that feeling of being complacent or I'll just continue to do what I'm doing is not a plan for the future. That is hope, and hope is definitely not a plan. There's a book out that I think I have recommended to our tribe that Dan and I have both read and both have discussed. The author is Carol Ross. The title is The War on Small Business. You ought to pick up a copy, read the book. I think Carol is right on track and Dan agrees. We've seen this trend that there's a move towards consolidation in this country from independent, entrepreneurial, capitalist businesses, small business owners like we in our practices. There's a trend towards consolidation, towards removing the independent entrepreneur. We saw that with COVID. We saw how big businesses, big chains were allowed to operate, and it was the small business owner that was forced to stay closed. This is the trend. It's not going to stop. What does that mean for you as one who owns your small business and you have found it to be privilege that you have by working hard and taking the freedoms that we've been given in this country? What do you do with this trend? Well, you have to diversify. You have to have plan B. You have to have plan B, C, and D. That means multiple streams of income, whether that's through real estate investments or participations in other business ventures. That's really what we do in Freedom Founders. We learn how to find and vet the right people, how to collaborate, how to make investments with them. This is really your training ground for what I had to start learning many years ago in my life and how to take control with diversification through other people and learning who those people should be and what those structures could look like. You're getting a firsthand ability to do that in Freedom Founders. And I want you to take full advantage of that, not just in your current investments in real estate, but understand how to put joint ventures together. These are skill sets that you will be able to utilize for the rest of your lifetime. And your kids and your grandkids definitely need to understand what this looks like because this is not taught in school. It is not taught in school anywhere. This is something that you learn boots on the ground, out on the street, and Freedom Founders is the best place for you to learn that. The fact that we still have the choice of where we want to live in this country. We have 50 states. To date, we can move across state lines without any challenge or barriers to entry. Certainly, there are licensing requirements for being in professional practice. I understand that. Notwithstanding that fact, we can choose where we want to live. Dan and I both feel that it's very important that we be very judicious in where we choose to live going forward. If you live in a state that is becoming more and more apparent to be intrusive into your rights as a business owner and the freedoms you want to have, probably a good time to start looking for other places to live. Now, that doesn't come without a lot of contemplation, a lot of discussion, a lot of planning. I get that. It's not a quick move to make, but you're in this for the long game. Your family is in this for the long game. So don't restrict yourself from thinking what you might think today would be outside the box. You've got to think a bigger picture, because this is long-term strategy, not tactical moves to make. So just think about that in terms of where you want to live, assuming it's still in this country, which is where I plan to be, irregardless of what's happening. I think still the U.S. is the place I want to be. We talked about the fact that it's dangerous today more than ever to allow too much equity, too much wealth to remain captive in one small business. Again, for the reasons we just discussed, there's consolidation happening. The window of opportunity for your business to continue on at the same profitable margin down the road. Now, that may be 5 years, 7 years, 10 years. You still got a window, but that window is tighter. You can't plan on owning and remaining profitable in a business like we used to for 20, 30, 40 years. That's the old model. The current model is you better be adaptable and be diversifying and getting some amount of capital out of your business, building some wealth outside of your specialized technical business that you have, and not relying on that one business to carry the full weight of your security and stability for your family and certainly for your retirement. You're in Freedom Founders, you get that. That's why you're here. Just need to continue that process and not become dependent for too many years on your singular business or business ownership. You need to diversify. Doing things simultaneously versus sequentially, again, something we wrote about in the book, Own Your Freedom. Too much thinking in this world and the way we've been brought up to do things sequentially. You get this step done right, and then you go to this step and this step and this step. Nope, today you've got to be doing things at the same time in parallel, not in a linear fashion. Again, you get that in Freedom Founders. That's what we talk about so much of the time. The good news is in some markets like real estate, it still favors the small investor, because real estate, for the most part, is still a very fragmented industry, and that's where opportunity comes. Where industries are centralized, financial markets, for example, Wall Street, it's so commoditized today that you or myself, as a small retail investor, we have no chance there. We are the what are called the marks, and big money makes money off of us. So again, you are here for a reason to become more efficient in orchestrating your financial future than you would if you are just playing your money on Wall Street. I think that's really it in my overview of today's conversation. The rest is up to you. Dig in, listen, take notes, and let's continue the conversation on Fit Calls and in our meetings going forward. I love to do this with you. We are on our own frontiers, and we want to continue to navigate this with forward-acting thinking and not reactive. Reactive is the worst place to be. Talk to you all soon. Well, Dan, great to get back together with you again today. It's been a little bit of time since we last spoken, since we last spent some time talking about the events of the world, the events of the country, and where things are headed. A lot's transpired. As a nation, we have egg on our face from a disastrous retreat from Afghanistan. We have the continuation of the border crisis with the wide open borders and hordes of people coming from Central America into our country. Gas and fuel prices are up. Inflation is running at its highest level in 13 years. Supply chain issues are continuing on as the current transportation secretary is apparently on paternity leave for the next 2 months.
Back, I think he's back from that, actually, but I'm not sure that makes any difference.
Well, I think he said something about he had things under control because he had some apprenticeship program. I'm not sure exactly what that meant. My point, Dan, is we continue to see the continuation of the issues that have been fomented by last year's COVID pandemic, which transpired during former President Trump's watch and now into the Biden administration. It's not one or the other. Both sides have been pushing for, I think, a greater focus on creating dependence in this country. I think that we are definitely headed down a slippery slope at this point. And I want to talk to you about the fact that we're not pessimists. We're entrepreneurs. We are capitalists. That's the way we have built our lives and this country was built on. Yet we do face some real headwinds ahead today. So give me your overall take, and then we'll dive into some specific topics and trouble spots that I think people are dealing with today.
Well, I think that there is a tendency, particularly amongst those of us who are meritocracy oriented, and freedom-oriented, if you will, American traditionalists, there's a tendency to be entirely focused on and infuriated by the outrage of the day, week, and month, of which, as you point out, there are many, maybe more at the same time than in a long, long time. And they all bring with them legitimate and genuine peril. However, there is almost always some, to use the cliche, silver lining. There is almost always some good news in all of it, and there is an overarching piece of good news. The overarching piece of good news is that it is worth remembering that, with very rare exception, the Trump administration, in some ways being one of them, government, particularly at the federal level, is infinitely better at promising and threatening and scheming than it is at doing. It's actually very dysfunctional, and in some ways engineered in the first place to be dysfunctional, has a way to protect us from it. And even when really stupid shit gets enacted by legislation or by, excuse me, dictatorial fiat, the enormous bureaucratic morass that now has to go actually write rules and implement rules is typically very slow, very clumsy, and very unsuccessful at it. As a result, there's all this screaming about social media, but there hasn't been a piece of legislation to remedy any of it, even proposed, let alone anything done with it. The current two bills that seem to threaten us the most may or may not ever get passed. If they do, they're going to be in some sort of watered down, as much theatrical as practical reality form. And then a lot of that, it is going to disappear into the bureaucratic morass where it mostly will never be seen again. So the overarching piece of good news is a lot of the stuff that we react to viscerally, as well as the stuff that seems to be a direct threat to us entrepreneurially or financially, it doesn't happen at the level that it threatens. It's sort of like a great big giant monster being described and depicted as about to unleash itself upon the earth. And what shows up is a 8-year-old kid in a monster costume at the door trick-or-treating.
Yeah.
So that's the overarching piece of good news. The little specific piece of good news of the moment is that the threatened taxes to pay for all the nonsense they want to do have shifted over to tax the super rich.
Right.
Which I don't think that's you. I know it isn't me. And I doubt that it's many of the people on this call.
Right. I agree with you, Dan. And the government's very good at creating division and creating an us versus them. And as long as the them is not part of the majority, then it's like, yeah, okay. It's okay for them to pay their fair share, whoever they might be, by definition. My issue is that, and this is a slow-moving trend, but it seems like it's been faster this last year, is that once the government lays out some kind of edict on, in this case, who they're going to tax and how, then the next step will be the next tier down. And I think that goes into the overall premise. You and I have spoken about this in some past communications, is Carol Ross' book, The War on Small Business. Again,
absolutely.
What I'm looking at, Dan, is you're right. These things are slow moving. The government is dysfunctional in many ways, and a lot of what's being proposed will not make it through on this pass. However, how do we position ourselves? And again, look, as small business, how do we position ourselves for not only to be defensive against some of the mandates that are causing the upheaval in our small businesses, but also you talk a lot about the movement of money. And of course, we have trillions of dollars that have been moving through the economy created by the Federal Reserve's expanding of credit massively. So how do we, on a proactive basis, have a chance to go and get in front of the movement of money while we're trying to maintain our businesses with margins that are being compressed and the labor shortage that's out there today? The government loves this. I mean, they love to see us independents have to maneuver because it keeps us busy over here on the left when we want to be moving to the right. So give me your sense of that.
I almost hate to say it, but the best strategy, not that everybody can do it, at least in the short term, to be entirely candid, is to get your money out of an active small business or business and get your money into investing. As you point out, the independent small business, both by intent and as collateral damage, has been real rough terrain for the last couple of years and is likely to be real rough terrain for a number of years to come. That's the small independent to regional bank, that's the single independent hospital, that's the guy with three restaurants, not 30, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's why there's so much consolidation occurring in a number of industries.
Right.
There's always ebb and flow of that, but it's happening because the owner of the two car dealerships has done the math of where he is now and what the circumstances on the ground are likely to look like over the next 36 to 48 months. And he's saying to himself, I'm better off not having my wealth captive inside this business. I'm better off having it out and mobile and able to be diversified and so forth. And to some extent, not only is the war on small business occurred and is occurring, it's being successful. I talked to somebody who just, they had three independent pharmacies in three neighboring small communities. And they just sold, maybe 2 months ago. And even in the current interest environment, in taking the proceeds and investing them one-third conservative, one-third moderate risk, and one-third speculative, his net yield month-to-month is twice what his net was from actually running the three pharmacies. Well, yeah, because at least it's a moving target.
Right.
Right. So that's the best advice. The second best advice is if you could somehow align your business with, to your point, where money is moving. For example, money is moving to the trend in Florida. Money is moving to bigger houses. It's moving to the west coast of Florida rather than the east coast of Florida because it's easier to find a bigger house there or to build one because people want to put their home office in. They want a classroom. They want space all of a sudden. And that means they're going to buy a crap load of furniture and decorating services and backyard landscaping and everything else. So everybody in business has got to think about what those trends say about what I sell and who I sell it to, either directly to the consumer or to the intermediary. And tied to that, you got to think about the financial condition of the customer you sell to.
Right.
Their mental condition, their emotional condition, and their actual financial condition. And typically, the more affluent they are, not just in income but in net worth, the less they will sacrifice their behavior and their preferences in reaction to changes in the economy, tax policy, government. They'll move around physically and financially as best they can, and they're still going to do what they want. If Mama wants to remodel that whole kitchen, Mama's going to remodel that whole kitchen, regardless of Dad throwing a brick at the CNBC broadcast showing Biden's speech, right? But come down three levels of financial wherewithal, and Dad's going to dig in his heels, and Mom's not going to remodel the kitchen, or vice versa, because I realize I'm being sexist. So you've got to consider this. I mean, I started preaching 5 years ago, aggressively, the idea of more from fewer and less.
Correct.
And I was ahead of the labor shortage, which, of course, now makes that the advice of the century. But these are the kind of moves people that are actively in business have got to figure out how to make.
I've noticed in our group, Dan, and through the many doctors and dentists that I speak with or have conversations with, that to your point, in the past, it's been how many practices can I control? How big can I get? Maybe I can grow enough to sell out to private equity and play that roll-up game. And because of the war on small business, because of what COVID has done, because of the labor shortage, because of supply chain issues, because of the compression and the distraught and frustration it brings to that small business owner who in the past probably could have managed to get through with multiple complexities. But today, that's changing. And those that have those multiple practices are looking at a couple of things. One, do I need all this? And to your point, also about the pharmacist who sold the returns on the time, the risk, the liability, the capital investment to manage all that, the returns aren't there. So small business owners, in this case, are sometimes finding to consolidate back to a primary location, in our case, in dentistry. And then the second part, which you've always made the point, you don't have to stay in the state or the locale in which you are at. If you're in a highly controlled, highly taxed state, such as the West Coast or East Coast, you can move. And I'm hearing more of that, whereas in the past, no, I'm going to stay, I'm dug in, and they're making those changes. So we're seeing that phenomenon. But going back to your point about getting all of your money out of a primary business, those that aren't in a position where they are at the end of a career, where maybe that's more feasible, but those that are still younger and need to be doing something, and they've invested a lot of time and capital into a specialized niche, what say you to that group? And I might just take you through, you know, people early in career, mid-career, and then Andrew's a little bit easier because they have the capacity. But what do you say to people that are younger in career to that advice? You said not everybody can do this, and I get that. So what do you tell that younger group?
So I think the peril of that is greater than ever, because the value of the technical skill, of the clinical skill, of the professional skill, is far more in danger of being commoditized than it was even 10 years ago. I think it was the last wealth report I wrote for you. I put the old ad in it on getting yourself a career by being a typewriter repairman.
Yes, exactly.
I realize the analogy, say, to somebody like a dentist, risks being offensive, but the analogy is real. Every technical skill like that, nobody in it thought it was going to go away, and they're shocked when it does. We are headed to there being no auto repair shops because you're just going to have chips and you're going to call tech support like you do for your laptop. And they're going to tell you, go out and take the third green chip out of the slot and put the spare one in we gave you with the car, and problem solved.
Right.
That's where we're headed. Now, we're kind of crawling there, but there will be a sudden acceleration and then it'll be over. And that's the peril of the old plan of 20 or 30 or even 40 years using the technical skill as the basis for a business grown over time with wealth captive in it and then cashed out.
Right.
So even if you got out of school yesterday and you are beginning in practice, doesn't matter, by the way, what kind of practice. My contention now is that you've got to be hyper-conscious about this, and you have got to scheme to accelerate the speed, i.e. reducing the number of years that it takes you to not be dependent on that earned income for your lifestyle. And so it can't be a 40-year plan anymore. It can't be a 30-year plan anymore. I don't believe it can be a 20-year plan anymore. And so you've got to, in my Renegade Millionaire system, I talk a lot about simultaneous, not sequential. And so we're all conditioned to think of progress sequentially. And to a great extent, it's an outdated conditioning. So now you've got to think about simultaneous. At the same time, what am I doing today to grow this business? What am I doing today to create financial wherewithal independent of this business? And that can't be I'll get around to that 5 years from now. It just can't anymore. The risk of that thinking is too great.
In the book we wrote together that came out earlier this month, Own Your Freedom, I speak about transferable skill sets away from the specialized technical skills that many of us learned in formal education. You speak about it in another way with your chapter on the evolution of a free person. In other words, we start at one level, but you talk about the fact that moving towards being the marketer of a business and then ultimately to investor, just what you said today. My question to you in being an investor with diversified capital investments, do you find that best way to do that and stay in front of the movement of money and to be able to position your capital in those diversified investments? Is that best done, in your opinion, Dan, through relationships or a combination of relationships? I'm talking about people, relationships that have other businesses that you would like to participate in. You may not be the driver of that business, but you can be a passive investor. Or a combination of that, plus if you have an acumen for the financial markets, what do you see? What's your experience with not only yourself, but other people that have also taken that same road towards diversification?
Well, so I think everybody has to be careful, right? I mean, Buffett's first rule of investor success is try not to lose money. So you got to be careful about the overconfidence of transferability of your knowledge. If you are privately investing or privately lending to a startup, to startups, to other people's businesses, and you're choosing them both because of what you assess as the quality of the individual and your relevant knowledge about the business, so that you can be a miniature Shark Tank type investor, meaning you're not just bringing money to the table, handing over money, you're also bringing expertise, knowledge, maybe other connections to the table. You have to be cautious, but that is a very valid approach, is what do I know how to do? What am really successful dentist, what does he know how to do besides teeth? Well, he runs a business that requires appointments being set by people not yet customers and bringing them into a location for a diagnostic plus prescriptive sales presentation, right? And at least in theory, he's pretty competent at that. So a business that has that as a commonality now that he has an opportunity to invest in is maybe more attractive because he has useful knowledge. A business that sells to dentists may be more attractive because he has a knowledge base. So playing venture capitalist, small ball, if you have a small bucket of resources, or in some cases, you could play venture capital without money at all with knowledge, expertise, and connections is just fine. The public is important, I think, to make yourself understand because of the aforementioned war on small business. The war on small business is about a favoring of big business. And so circumstances and conditions have been created, are being created, that favor big companies over small independent businesses in their same categories. So as an investor, as much as Wall Street is a den of thieves, it becomes a den of thieves that the investor with a relatively big bucket has to pay attention to. And again, what are your strengths? What do you already know about? Where do you have a knowledge base? How do you limit risk and loss and so forth is important. But you're going to have to learn it because in the, in the 5 to 7 to 10 year window ahead, it's very clear that conditions are going to be much more favorable to big business than they are to small business. So the multiple on your money is more available in the public equity markets than it is with your own business or with other people's businesses.
Right.
So you might like Barbara and want to be in the restaurant business, but you better think 6 times about that under the current condition. Then there's the issue of the asset class that you deal with most, which is real estate. And real estate still favors the small investor, maybe more than any other business. And big businesses find it hard to deal with. I'm sure you saw that Zillow suspended its, we're going to buy up the world of residential real estate plan. It turns out that it's not as easy to buy, fix up, manage, collect rents, et cetera, for 500 properties scattered all over Heaven's Half Acre from a distance, as you might think. So, you know, this is a place where the independent investor slash business person still has real advantages.
So if you're a specialized person in a niche and looking ahead at this 5 to 7 to 10 year window, making some definitive plans on what your particular business may want to look like, if be in that business at all in 5, 7, or 10 years, but starting to make that move now and look for the opportunities where the market disruptions, because again, the disruption is huge. Where do all these people go? Where do all the specialized professionals go that are in small businesses that are being upset in the consolidation? Yes, many will be taken over, and many today are in our industry. In healthcare overall, we've seen that movement in the last 10 years, heavily towards corporate consolidation, and it's happening in dentistry, it's happening in pharmacy, has been happening, well, pharmacy's ahead of us in dentistry. So we see the trends, and so looking at, as you said, what kind of business can you be in? Who are the customers? What are their needs? The customers who are more affluent and are not going to compromise certain standards of living or certain conveniences. So that could be a good place to look at. But again, this takes some creativity. It takes a total mindset shift from the way we were brought up to go into a career path, a profession that you're going to stay in for 30, 40 years. Those days are pretty well gone, is what we're saying. Dan, correct?
Yeah, I don't think right now there's a big move with kids to push them into tech. It's sort of the idea, oh boy, they'll all be coders. Well, the robots are going to code themselves.
Yeah.
So that's like typewriter repairmen of the current year. Yeah, I don't think the model of the captive wealth in the business over a long period of time and the other financial models that go with it. So again, the sequential thought, like if you came out of dental school yesterday, you would probably get a job first, but if you didn't, and you went into private practice for yourself, your thinking is now all sequential.
Right.
We'll get to this point, and then we'll hire an associate, and we'll get to this point and we'll do X. And parallel is I got married, and so as soon as we get to this point, we'll buy a house. And then as soon as we get to this point, we'll start a family. See, so my argument would be, no, you don't buy a house unless you're buying it strategically, not to live in for the next 20 years or 15 years or 10 years, but you're buying it principally for its investment opportunity. And in reality, you're probably better off renting an apartment half the size of what you would like and using that money to buy investment properties.
Exactly.
So all this sequential model that you and I grew up with is, I think, now fraught with peril. The reason people don't invest to start, and the reason a lot of people just turn over the investing to somebody altogether and don't feel like they should pay attention to any of it themselves, is all about risk. And they don't see the risk in what they're doing. And in reality, risks have become elevated in places that we long thought of as low risk, so that they're not really any riskier than places we used to think of as high risk. The Bill Bonner crowd, the old gold bugs and the financial newsletter guys, many of them have established second homes in places like Costa Rica. And they will argue with you, because if you raise that issue with people around you or with your spouse, you will get a reaction of, I'd be scared to live in a place with such an unstable government. And there can be guerrilla warfare, and there can be takeover, and there can be confiscation of assets, etc. And the Bill Bonner crowd's argument is, well, where do you think you are living?
Yeah.
Right? And they have a point. So I think people have to, when they think about risk and they look at different ways of doing things from a career standpoint, from a business standpoint, from a financial standpoint, and they see risk in one place and they don't see it in another, they need to look twice.
Exactly. And you actually started moving into my last question or last piece of conversation for today, and that is where we choose to live. And let's just keep it here in the U.S. and say that there's going to be more civil unrest. The whole point of entitlements and handouts in this last year of these economic stimulus that poured trillions of dollars in the economy and direct to consumer and purportedly to small business and whatever that meant was to go into a house arrest period of time to stop or slow down the spread. And now we're into mandated vaccines. But my point is, there's going to be more civil unrest with shortages and supply chain issues that the government can't never can come in and fix because they're trying to control the markets. So in our country, we do have still choices in all 50 states. At least today, we can move into other states, other locales. And I'll just take my state of Texas, which is moving more blue. And of course, we got the border wide open, which is intentional to change the demographics and the voting block of states like ours and other states. And we have centralized government, which is typically always progressive and liberal in our state. Our major cities all run by Democrats, but we have the outlying areas, the more rural areas, where there are huge blocks of conservatives. So from your vantage point, Dan, how important is that for people to be looking at based on where they live today and where they might want to position themselves for the future in terms of livelihood, bringing up families, business, et cetera?
Well, I think all our major cities, and in many cases our secondary cities, meaning like you hear in the news a lot about the crime problem in Chicago. You don't hear so much about it in Indianapolis, but urban Indianapolis has a proportionately serious problem to Chicago. We have 15 minutes from where I live, which seems to be a safe suburban area between two cities and far enough apart from either one of them. About 15 minutes from me, a high school this week has closed and gone to homeschooling for all of next week, not because of the virus, but because of unchecked violence in the school that it has been unable to handle. So I would say to people that the urban area in America and even the secondary cities are perilous now, and they're likely to be, to your point, for a while when you decide, for example, not to prosecute shoplifting. And people come into malls and steal all the high-end purses en masse and walk out. That's the broken windows principle in reverse. So if you allow that, you will soon have stabbings and shootings and muggings and carjackings at a higher and higher level. It's inevitable. So I think these areas are fundamentally uninhabitable. And then the next problem they'll have, the next wave of civil unrest that will occur, is whenever whoever has to take away a bunch of freebies. That can get real ugly. And there's plenty of history of it, so that will be a rerun of a movie, not a new movie. So I don't think you can safely keep a business or keep a home in or on the edge of a major or even secondary urban area. And that's terrible to say. But if you just look at the math, and if you watch the local news in any of these places, they're in serious trouble. I mean, a city like Minneapolis that only recently was a quintessential Midwest, everybody likes each other, safe to wander around. Who would think twice about going to the Mall of America? You go shop, I'll go shop, we'll meet up in 3 hours.
Right.
That's all over with in Minneapolis.
Yeah, it is.
And it's going to get worse before it gets better. So to your point, you are still, as they say, one of the airlines, you're still free to move Southwest.
Yeah.
You're free to move about the country.
Right.
And you're free to make choices and to transition, if not immediately uproot. And when you make a point of developing transferable skills, then you're even freer to move about the country. And like people who have built businesses or practices need to remember, however long it took you to get from zero to sustainability and profitability the first time around, it should take you a lot less.
Exactly.
If you want to replicate it again.
Yes.
Because you now know a bunch of stuff that you didn't know, and you've made mistakes you don't have to repeat. So if it was 0 to 10 years, it should be 0 to 4 years
right
now.
Yes.
And that should encourage you to think in this manner of a client who just recently moved from a deteriorating metro area. 10 years ago, when he moved there, it was far enough away from the city that there were cows walking around. Now the city has captured it, and all of its evils have arrived. And he has picked up and moved. And he is rapidly replicating the success that he had where he was at a much faster pace than he did the first time, because he took his intelligence with him, his experience with him, and he has resources that he didn't have.
Yes.
The first time around. So I think people have to keep this in mind.
Yeah, this is definitely a period of time where the conventional fear of change has got to be put to rest, and people really need to remove that complacency, or it will just get better, or we're just going through a phase. There's these major trends, these major headwinds are to a greater or lesser extent here to stay, and those who want to remain autonomous in their own right, in their own life, have got to make some changes now, or you'll be in a difficult position in the near future.
There's a risk in a sense of permanence. And again, we're all susceptible to it. We've almost all forgotten Kmart, the number one discount retailer in America. But they were, and now they are not. And everybody assumes Walmart will be here forever. I made a bet with a very early investor in Facebook, who did very well, by the way. Although I don't know if he's still in or out or whatever. I haven't talked to him in a few years. I made a bet with him at the time that in 10 years, Facebook wouldn't exist, at least as we knew it then. So I lost the bet, but only by the number of years.
Right.
Somewhat like Orwell was wrong about 1984.
Right.
He wasn't wrong about anything but the date. And I contend that we are seeing the beginning of the actual end of Facebook as we know it. And it couldn't come too soon from a societal standpoint. But nobody remembers MySpace, which was supposed to be inevitable.
Yeah.
AOL, which was supposed to be inevitable. And so we think of the city, for example, that we've lived in the way that we knew it then, not the way it is now. I always tell my wife, and it's true, I don't really see her, well, now with my vision, it's even truer, but I don't really see her at her current age when I look at her. I see her like 20 years ago. And so we have this idea of permanence and inevitability and continuance of what is that gets in our way. It's kind of a scotoma. It affects clear vision, and therefore it affects clear thinking. And whatever there was of that 10 years ago, 20 years ago, there's less of it now. Things change at a much faster pace. I mean, the example in your profession that I use all the time is Invisalign and Smile Direct Line.
Right.
I was dead wrong. I said there is no way in hell people are going to do orthodontics at home. And boy, was I wrong. And so you look at a profession or a category of business and you think, well, this can't be Amazoned. Right? There's no friggin' way that this can be affected in that way. And you will probably be wrong. The timing is open to question, but in many cases, it's likely to be a lot sooner than you think.
Exactly.
And a lot more abrupt. And so changes in your city, changes in your community, in the safety of your neighborhood, of the school your kid goes to, changes in your profession, changes in finance are all now accelerated. They're sped up. They're faster. And they tend to be revolutionary, not evolutionary. And you got to recalibrate your own proactivity about that to accommodate its reality.
Well, Dan, I appreciate your time today. Your insights is always much appreciated, and I know this conversation will be taken well by our listeners, and hopefully that they will take the appropriate action in their own lives and businesses and, you know, stay in front of these massive changes. Appreciate you, Dan.
Thanks, David.
All right. Take care.